Level 3, Ancient Egypt. The Ancient Egypt Gallery tells the stories of religion, burial practices, and everyday life in ancient Egypt, the period from around 3100 BC to 300 BC. Established in 1939 and largely unchanged since then, it is one of the smallest galleries in the museum, in a rectangular room only around 4 metres by 5 metres. The entry is a doorway of a similar size to one in an average house. A ceiling, however, is 6 metres high throughout, with an additional taller alcove, which shows two arched, blocked out and painted over windows. The high ceiling possibly contributes to the way the room stays constantly cool. Around the walls of the room are glass display cases at varying levels, and above these display cases is a mural that covers all four walls. The walls were painted to give the appearance of the inside of an ancient tomb, drawing on iconography found throughout the collection objects. The background is pale beige. The images, hand-painted, are of massive gods, cows, servants and symbols, and stretch up to the ceiling. The figures are typically flat, 2D, the people and animals portrayed from the side. A blue snake curves along one wall. 10 small servants attend to a giant black and white cow with golden horns. A pharaoh with a large blue headdress sits on a throne with a golden cat. There is a small signature on one wall that reads, H.T. Congdon, 1940. The floor of the gallery is a checkerboard of alternating tiles, one that looks like brown marble and one with a geometric design with interwoven brown, black and orange shapes. The room is full, busy with imagery and small objects amongst larger ones, objects and casts of hieroglyphs mounted on the walls with small text panels explaining the collection. In the centre of the room are three glass display cases. One stands alone from the others, holding the fabric-wrapped mummy of George, and several other mummified animals and burial items. The other two cases are side by side, one holding the mummy in its sarcophagi or coffin of Renpit Nefert, and the other holds three sarcophagi lids. Each glass case stands around 1.6 metres high, 1.6 metres long and half a metre wide, and is bordered by wood-painted green. Inside, the cases are divided by three shelves. In the case of Renpit Nefert, the three shelves hold the bottom half of the sarcophagi, the mummified body of Renpit Nefert, and on the top shelf, the highly decorated top of the sarcophagi. The text by Renpit Nefert is a small green-painted wooden frame on a piece of faded paper with Egyptian-styled red and blue geometric graphics under the title and down the centre of the page. The graphic in the centre of the page looks like a stylized lotus stalk. The text reads, Mummy and Coffin of Renpit Nefert, brackets, beautiful year. The hieroglyphs on Renpit Nefert's coffin name her father as Nesheru and her mother as Khatmet. The gods painted on her coffin grant her a beautiful burial. The elaborate nature of her mummification and coffin suggests that her family were wealthy, otherwise we know little about her. On the basis of the painted coffin designs, it has been estimated she was buried around 2,500 years ago. However, C14 dating of the mummy's bones suggests she died about 2,400 years ago. A40016, A40039, the coffin and mummy of Renpit Nefert were obtained for the South Australian Museum by Rev. William Roby Fletcher in Cairo in 1890, and is believed to have come from Akhmi, Apu or Panopolis, the centre of textile manufacturing in ancient Egypt. The lid of the sarcophagi is busy with rows of hieroglyphs and imagery. The images of gods, birds, and detailed geometric patterns in teardrop and diamond shapes are painted in beige, blue, and reddish-brown. At the top end of the lid is the carved shape of the face, which would have been laid over Renpit Nefert's head. A simple painted face with kohl eyeliner is surrounded by large black-and-white striped headdress. Immediately to the right of the door as you enter the room, on the western wall, is a glass-encased, wall-mounted cast of the Rosetta Stone, the piece that enabled the translation of Egyptian hieroglyphs. A text next to the object reads, The Rosetta Stone was found in 1799 at Rosetta in the Nile Delta by a French soldier in Napoleon's army. After the French were defeated by the English, the stone was sent to the British Museum in London. There were three types of writing on the stone, one of which was recognised as Greek. The other two scripts were found to be hieroglyphic, picture writing, and demotic, a cursive Egyptian writing common after 700 BC. These two ancient scripts give translations into Egyptian and demotic of the Greek text. Thomas Young, an Englishman, was the first to make any progress. He noticed that a number of words like priest, king, and temple kept recurring in the Greek text. He then tried to divide the hieroglyphic text into words and was able to give meaning to several groups of hieroglyphs. He also deduced that the oval shapes in the hieroglyphic script contained royal names. However, it was the Frenchman Jean-François Champignon who completely deciphered the mysterious scripts. The inscription is a copy of a priestly decree issued in 196 BC on the occasion of the 9th anniversary of the coronation of King Ptolemy V. It lists the honours bestowed upon the king by the priests of Egypt and specifies that this text be recorded in hieroglyphic, Demotic, and Greek, and placed in all major temples of Egypt. End quote. This cast of the Rosetta Stone is plaster, painted dark grey to look like a slab of stone, with carved writing in white. It is mounted on the wall and closely encased in glass. This is one of only a few casts of the face of the original stone, which itself is a broken slab from a larger monument. The bottom left corner is the only intact corner of the stone, whereas the other three are broken, interrupting the text. The cast is roughly 3 centimetres deep, 50 centimetres across, and 1 metre high. Within the rectangle of the cast is the uneven shape of the original stone, the edges broken off and eroded by time. It is divided into 3 even horizontal sections, in each of the 3 ancient scripts. The top section, hieroglyphics, has 14 rows of close pictures, each fitting into approximately the same 1 centimeter square space. Each image is a detailed collection of lines, curves, and dots, sometimes with recognizable features such as birds. The middle section in Demotic has much smaller writing, fitting 32 lines of scripts. There are no spaces between the letters. Each individual letter is made up of curves or short lines, with frequent repeats of 3 or 4 vertical lines or single diagonal lines. The bottom section in Greek is smaller still with 54 lines. The letters with no spaces between them are recognisably similar to the modern Greek alphabet, each letter a simple and stark shape, often triangular or entirely even circles. In a case to the left of the door on the southern wall is a collection of shabtis, or personal servants for the afterlife. These take the form of small figures, ranging from 10 centimetres to 20 centimetres tall. The glass case containing the shabtis is around 10 centimetres deep and wall-mounted. There are 10 shabtis on the lower shelf and 8 smaller ones on the higher shelf. Some of them have their own stone plinths, and others have plain museum plinths. The background of the display case and the museum plinths are painted pale green or blue. The figures are all standing with their arms crossed. Some have decorative headdresses. Each is a single colour, made from brown wood, white stone, or faience, a blue ceramic. The main text reads, quote, Shabtis, servants for eternity. Shabtis were small figures, often made in the likeness of the tomb owner. They were intended to act as a deputy when he was required to work in the next world. They were usually made in the shape of small mummies, and some carried baskets, hoes, and mattocks to help them carry out agricultural tasks. Shabtis were made from a variety of materials, wood, stone, wax, or glazed pottery. A hieroglyphic text carved on some of the figures says, O Shabti, if N, owner's name, is detailed for any task to be done there, brackets, in the afterlife, as a man is bound, namely to cultivate the fields, to flood the banks, and to carry away sand to the east and west, then say you, here am I. One of the taller shabtis, carved in wood, features a headdress, the sides of which fall over the figure's shoulders and down to its crossed arms. A single line of text runs from its arms to its feet as on a long piece of textile. The text beside this shabti reads, Shabti for an unknown lady. The wooden figure does not carry any agricultural tools and is inscribed with only a single line of text. It reads, In truth thou shalt come forth from the house where thou advances with Horus, to the Ka spirit of, name lost, whose word is right and true. The house refers to the hall of judgment, where a person's heart would be weighed against the feather of truth. See the wall painting of the final judgment. End quote. Along the eastern wall is a row of 4 1 metre high display cases on wooden legs, with wooden frames around glass cases. The wooden framing is painted green. The cases are around 1 metre wide, 1 metre deep, and are made to be viewed from above through a large glass pane. Each case holds a collection of small artifacts relating to everyday life in ancient Egypt. One of the cases is labelled Personal Glimpses, and contains small personal objects such as mirrors, combs, jewellery, small vessels, and cosmetics. The text reads, quote, Some objects found in tombs show that the ancient Egyptians believed that everyday life would continue after death. Personal possessions were included in the tomb for the owner to use in the afterlife, end quote. In this display are two brass mirrors side by side, one the original and one the replica. The text from the label under the original reads, quote, bronze mirror. This mirror was probably set in a wooden handle. The ancient Egyptians called it unher, which translates as face opener, and they kept the disc in a highly polished condition. The handle was often made to represent a lotus stalk or sacred pillar, and the top was fashioned in the shape of a god's head, A40060. The mirror has a mostly circular, flat face, around 15 centimetres wide, with an approximately 1 centimetre by 3 centimetre tab of brass protruding from the edge of the circle to join with the missing handle. The object is tarnished and uneven brass, dark brown and unrecognisable as a mirror as it offers no reflection. A text below the replica reads, quote, this replica of an Egyptian mirror has been polished to show the quality of the reflection which can be obtained from bronze, end quote. The replica is made to look as it would have when the original was made, polished to a shiny gold and offering a reasonably clear reflection. The sides of the reflection are slightly distorted at the edges of the mirror. The replica has a white handle protruding from the bottom of the circle. At the base of the handle is a carved and painted geometric design, a row of dark blue circles with light blue petal shapes and a gold background. And then a row above that, a row of black triangles is set against a yellow and gold background. This concludes our description of the Ancient Egypt Gallery.